Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that should not have made it home. Not once, not on her first mission, and certainly not on her 207th. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Taildragger, and you're listening to The Hangar, where we keep the old birds flying, at least in the telling. Today we're doing a restoration spotlight, and it's one that's been quietly underway for years now in a climate-controlled hangar in Virginia. The crews working on her aren't trying to make her look new. That's the whole point. They're fighting to keep her exactly as the war left her. Her name is Flack Bait. Now, before I get to the airplane, let me say a quick word about the folks keeping today's show in the air. The Hangar is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo, private pilot, instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And friend, today's whole segment is about a machine that told 207 of them. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's talk about the airplane. She was the Martin B-26 Marauder built by the Glenn L. Martin Company up in Baltimore. And I'll be honest with you, when she rolled out in 1941, she scared the daylights out of a lot of good pilots. Here's why. The fellow who designed her, a young engineer named Peyton Magruder, was chasing speed. He gave her a fat cigar of a fuselage, two enormous radial engines, and these short, stubby little wings. Beautiful in the air, fast as anything in her class. But those small wings meant she had to come over the fence hot, real hot landing speeds. That made the wartime kids fresh out of flight school sweat through their flight suits. They gave her some cruel nicknames, the Widowmaker, the Baltimore Whore, because she had no visible means of support. And down at MacDill Field in Florida, where they were training crews in a hurry, the saying went, one a day in Tampa Bay, because that's about how often one went into the water. Now here's where it gets interesting. The airplane wasn't the problem, the training was. Once they stretched the wings a little, once they taught pilots to respect her numbers and never, ever let the airspeed bleed off on final, the Marauder turned into one of the safest bombers of the entire war. By the end, the B-26 had the lowest combat loss rate of any American bomber flying over Europe. The lowest, that machine they called the Widowmaker, brought more boys home than almost anything in the skies, and no Marauder brought them home like Flack Bait. She came off the Baltimore line in 1943, a B-26B model, olive drab over gray, just another bomber in a war drowning in bombers. They ferried her across the Atlantic and handed her to the 449th Bomb Squadron of the 322nd Bomb Group, part of the 9th Air Force, flying out of England. Her pilot was a young lieutenant named James Farrell, and the name? It's not as grand as it sounds. Farrell had a brother back home with a little dog, and that dog's name was Flea Bait. So when it came time to christen his airplane, Farrell looked at where she was headed, low and medium altitude, right down into the teeth of the German anti-aircraft guns, and he made a little joke of it. Flea Bait became Flack Bait, Flack. For the German anti-aircraft fire, Fliegerabwehrkanone, if you want the whole mouthful. Fliegerabwehrkanone, the flying defense cannon. The crews just called it Flack. Black puffs of smoke that bloomed around you like deadly flowers, each one full of steel splinters traveling faster than sound, and Flack Bait flew straight into it, over and over, for nearly 2 years. Picture the inside of that airplane on a mission morning. It's cold. England in the winter is wet and gray, and the metal of that fuselage soaks the chill right into your bones. You can smell it, that wartime cocktail, hydraulic fluid, hot oil, rubber, the sharp tang of high-octane avgas. Back when Avgas was cheap and the only thing free was the danger. Two Pratt and Whitney radials out on those stubby wings, 18 cylinders apiece, and when they lit off they didn't purr, they barked. They coughed blue smoke and shook the whole airframe, and then settled into this deep, ragged, beautiful roar that you felt in your chest more than you heard in your ears. Six men climbed aboard. Pilot, co-pilot, bombardier up in the glass nose, a radio operator, and the gunners. Young men, most of them. Some barely old enough to vote. They'd cross the channel low and fast, hit a bridge or a marshalling yard or a gun position, and run home through a sky full of steel, and Flack Bait kept catching it. That's the thing. She earned her name 100 times over. She came home with her hydraulics shot out. She came home on one engine. She limped back with her tail riddled, her wings punched full of holes, her electrical system hanging in shreds. One time she took a hit that knocked out both engines and the crew got them restarted. Another time she came back with a fire. Time and again the ground crews would look at her after a mission and shake their heads and wonder how in the world she was still in one piece. By the time the shooting stopped in Europe, the men had patched more than 1,000 holes in her skin. 1,000. Think about that. Every one of those patches is a moment where the steel found her and missed the men inside by inches. She flew on D-Day twice. June 6, 1944, the morning of the invasion. Flakbait went out over Normandy, not once but two times, bombing the German defenses while the boys were coming ashore below. She flew on the day Paris was liberated. She was over the Battle of the Bulge that brutal winter. And on the 17th of April 1945, with the war in Europe just weeks from over, she flew her 207th combat mission. 207, more combat missions than any other American aircraft in the entire Second World War. No B-17 matched it. No B-24, no fighter. This stubby, hot-landing, ill-tempered medium bomber that they almost canceled before the war even started outlasted them all. Now here's where the story takes a turn that I love. As an old guy who cares about this stuff. When the war ended, most of those warbirds met a sad fate. They flew them out to the desert, to places like Kingman, Arizona, and they chopped them up. Tens of thousands of airplanes, the most advanced machines humanity had ever built, fed into smelters and turned into aluminum ingots, pots and pans. A whole generation of history melted down because nobody had room for it, and nobody, in that exhausted moment, could imagine missing it. But somebody, somewhere, had the sense to look at Flakbait and say, not this one. The Army Air Forces set her aside. They understood what she was. They cut the nose section away and shipped it back to the United States, and eventually it came into the care of the Smithsonian. For decades, that battered nose, with the name still painted on her and the mission markers still showing, sat in storage and was shown only in pieces. The rest of her, the wings, the tail, the fuselage, all of it crated up and waiting. Waiting for a country that had the room and the wisdom to finally give her the treatment she'd earned. That day came at the National Air and Space Museum, at the big Udvar Hazy Center out by Dulles Airport in Virginia. The conservators went to work on her, and here is the part that separates a restoration like this from the shiny show queens you see polished up at the fly-ins. They are not making her new. Let me say that again because it goes against every instinct a restorer has. When most of us rebuild an airplane, we want her perfect. We want the paint flawless, the rivets gleaming, every panel straight as the day she left the factory. We chase that showroom shine. The team working on Flakbait is doing the opposite. They are preserving her. Every one of those patched flak holes stays. The original wartime paint, faded and chipped and scarred, stays. The grime, the repairs the ground crew scratched in by hand in the mud of a forward airfield, the names, the marks, all of it stays. They go in with the patience of surgeons, stabilizing the metal so it won't corrode any further. Cleaning away only what threatens the airplane, and leaving every honest scar exactly where the war put it. Because that damage is the document. You can read that airplane like a diary. Every patch is a story. Every repair is a young crewman's frightened, capable hands keeping her alive one more day. To sand all that away and repaint her pretty would be to erase the very thing that makes her matter. They're not restoring an airplane, they're conserving a witness. And that's a philosophy that's been quietly changing how the great museums think about these machines. There's a time for the gleaming, airworthy warbird that thunders down the runway at Oshkosh and makes the hair stand up on your arms. I love those. We all do. But there's also a time to stop and preserve and protect the original artifact exactly as history handed it to us, so that 100 years from now, somebody can stand in front of Flakbait and see, not our idea of the war, but the real thing. The actual aluminum that actual men flew through actual fire. You stand in front of that nose section and you can almost hear it. The barking of those radials. The chatter on the interphone. The thump of the flak walking toward you, and you understand in a way no book can teach you what these kids did, day after day, 207 times for that one airplane, and her crews climbing back in each morning, knowing the odds. Lieutenant Farrell named her after a little dog as a joke, but there was nothing funny about what she did, or what she came to mean. She's the last of her kind, you know? Of the more than 5,000 Marauders that Martin built, only a handful of complete airframes survive anywhere on Earth. And Flakbait is the only combat veteran Marauder left in the world. The only one that actually went to war and came back. When she's finished, she'll stand as the most decorated, most flown, most quietly miraculous bomber America ever sent into the sky. My thanks today to the National Air and Space Museum and its conservation teams, whose work and published accounts told this story far better than I can, and to the historians of the 9th Air Force who kept the record of what those crews did. You can find us at radiohangar.com if you want to ride along again. Next time you're tempted to buff every scratch out of something old, think about Flakbait. Some scars are the whole story. This is Taildragger. Keep her right side up and keep the faith.